Good morning. My name is Amber, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Auto Trader and Kelley Blue Book Sales Day call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. And if you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Brenna Buehler, Senior Public Relations Manager for Cox Automotive, you may begin your conference.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining this month's Kelley Blue Book and Auto Trader Sales Day conference call. We have both Alec Gutierrez, Senior Analyst for Kelley Blue Book, and Michelle Krebs, Senior Analyst for Auto Trader, who will be speaking today on the December and also year-end results, followed by a Q&A. First, we have Alec Gutierrez.
Thanks, Brenna, and thanks, everyone, for joining the call. As we've been tracking the numbers coming in, as I'm sure all of you have, we have been surprised to see the numbers come in stronger than originally anticipated. Our initial forecast for the month called for a SAR of 17.4 million units overall, which would have closed us out on the whole for 2017, about 20,000 units shy of last year's record setting volume of a little more than 17.4 million units overall. With most manufacturers now having reported results for the month, it now looks as though we expect to surpass last year's total to the tune of about 20,000 some odd units for a December SAR likely in excess of 18 million, perhaps as high as 18.1 million SAR overall. A lot of the momentum came late in the month, with incentive activity picking up for a number of manufacturers. Michelle has some great stats and analysis there to share. But overall, even heading into December, we are already at a record-setting pace in terms of incentive spend, with the industry hovering at about $3,800 per unit average spend, which is fairly well above what we were seeing at this time last year, where average incentive spend per unit was hovering around $3,000 per unit through the entirety of the fourth quarter. So incentive spend remains high, in a lot of ways driven by certainly rising ATPs. However, looking at the transaction prices, which now sit at a little north of $34,000 per unit on average, when you compare that to the rise of incentive spend, we are continuing to see incentive spend rise faster than average transaction prices, with the year-to-date ratio of incentive dollars per unit to average transaction price hovering at about 9.7%, which is on par with the record highs that we saw in both 2005 at the peak of the market prior to the recession, as well as in 2008 when we were at the lowest point in the recession. So heading into next year, we know that days to turn, days in inventory remains remarkably high. For the year on average, we're at around 75 days to sell per unit, which is about 7 days higher than it was at this time last year. The last couple of months, we've been trending at north of 80 days in inventory across the industry, hence why we saw an increase in incentives that had closed out the month, as inventories have been picking up a bit at most dealerships. So heading into 2017, we do expect, and we have seen communication from a number of manufacturers that production will likely be cut, particularly in compact and mid-size segments, which, as we all know, have not been selling near as well as a number of other sport utility segments that have been doing well. In fact, if we look at it, these numbers don't necessarily include all of the December stats as of yet, but to close the year, mid-size crossovers will end the year up north of 15%. Compact crossovers will end the year up north of 4%, so growth has even slowed in that segment to some degree. But you look at compact cars, down 2.5%. Mid-size cars, down almost 1%. Even entry-level luxury sedans, like your BMW 3 Series and similar, down 10.5%, although I should point out that similar to the non-luxury side, luxury compact SUVs were up about 30%. So the story of the U.S. market continuing to opt for sport utilities for trucks, that continues to be the case as sedan sales have taken a bit of a hit. But again, we think that if production from the manufacturers is right-sized, we will likely see incentive spend pulled back a bit. And if that scenario plays itself out, we expect to see sales in 2017 likely in the high 16 to low 17 million unit SAR range. So that's a slight decline from the record high that we'll likely see this year. But again, if production keeps up, whatever the manufacturers produce, they will likely sell, even if that requires incentive support, as we've seen through the fourth quarter. So that's certainly something to keep in mind. But overall, certainly a very, very strong year for the industry. A lot of positives there. Certainly just available inventory outpacing demand in the trailing end of the year, hence leading to rising incentives. With that, I will turn it over to Michelle for further thoughts and insights.
Thanks, Alec. I thought again this month I would talk a little bit about what we're seeing in terms of strategies for incentives. We have a company in Ann Arbor, Michigan, AIS Rebates, that tracks this for us. And what we have seen is a flurry of incentives activity in the past 2 months during the holiday season. And as each month, November and December, progressed, we saw those programs ratchet up and be tweaked by the automakers. We see a couple overarching strategies in terms of how incentives are being used. We're seeing incentives used heavily on aging inventory. As Alec mentioned, inventories did start building up in 2016. And then, of course, we saw heavy incentives on slow-selling models and categories, specifically cars and alternative fuel kinds of vehicles. For example, in December, we saw a very hefty incentive on the 2017 Chevrolet Cruze, very attractive discounting if you could get the GM employee family member a discount, and Nissan Altima. We also saw very heavy incentives on Ford's C-Max, EV, Fusion Energy, especially on the east, that targeted to the East Coast. Some of them were as high as $13,000, which is interesting in light of Ford's announcement of electrification yesterday. And it begs the question, where is the demand going to come from? The other strategy we've seen used by automakers is incentives to maintain sales and market share on very high profit vehicles. For instance, Fiat Chrysler had a lot of big cash on some of its aging inventory of trucks. We had saw Ford target specific regions with big incentives on things like the Expedition and certain models, older models of the F-150. GM had its red tag sales, and they were tweaking that right till the end of the month and had some big cash on lease and loyalty conquest offers on things like the Equinox, Traverse, Tahoe, Suburban, and some models of the Silverado. And we're seeing the incentives being increasingly granular. We saw Hyundai focus on the South Central region right down to the dealer level, the South Central areas where we saw some of the biggest incentives. And it's interesting, the strategies by companies. We see the slow, steady tortoises like Toyota, Honda, Subaru. They just keep the same number of programs throughout the month. And then we see other automakers making very swift, significant changes, moving money here and there in different kinds of inventory, different categories. Nissan, Hyundai, Fiat Chrysler, and even GM this month were in those categories. And if you look, those largely paid off. So we can go through company by company, but I would suggest we answer what you would like to have answered. So could we open it up to questions?
Certainly. At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just one moment to compile the Q&A roster. And your first question comes from Megan Lampinen from Automotive World. Your line is open.
Hi, Megan.
Hi, guys. With the new Trump administration coming in, we've been hearing a lot more about possible steeper taxes for imported cars. And I'm wondering if, as we look down the road, that will translate into price increases. And I'm wondering Is this something that those OEMs with a greater local production can turn into their benefit? So how do you see that possibly playing out on the pricing front?
I'll jump in on that because I've been asked this question quite a bit. I think one of the problems with 2017 and why we haven't zeroed in on our forecast is it is the year of unknowns, at least so far. Mm. We're hearing a lot of different things, including border tariffs, and we don't exactly know what the entire picture looks like in regarding economic tax, tariff policies. What will those be? So we are, and I know there's concern in the among the import companies that there will be tariffs. There is some speculation that could push the sales down. What does that mean for parts coming in from outside that go into locally made parts, cars? That could push prices higher. And we know there's, as you could tell by the incentive spending, we have watched this past year a serious affordability issue. There are just some people frozen out of the market as it is, and we're already seeing interest rates climb a bit, gas prices climb a bit. So affordability will be an issue, and it's not clear how all these other things will play out in terms of car pricing. On the other hand, if we saw infrastructure spending, we could see higher truck sales. If we saw tax changes or some other moves, it could, just stretching out some of the regulatory requirements or easing up on some of that could keep car prices in check. I just think it's a giant mixing bowl of ifs, and we don't know what the entire picture looks like.
Fair enough. One more question I hope to sneak in. December saw the launch of Ford's new GT. I'm interested in hearing more about sort of the segment, minuscule volumes, but obviously sort of a showcase for technology. Perhaps you can touch on what we might see on in this segment this year, looking ahead?
Well, I would say certainly we're going to see more and more technology. In fact, Auto Trader has a technology study coming out coming up with the Detroit Auto Show, and clearly there is a high demand for more and more technology in vehicles, especially among younger buyers. Technologies typically show up in the high-end vehicles. So. Mm-hmm. Maybe, Alec, you have something to add to that?
Yeah, not too much. I think you're spot on, Michelle. I mean, I think exotics and high-end performance cars, those are always going to be bleeding-edge vehicles that feature the latest and greatest tech from their respective manufacturers. So that's a trend that will continue as you talk about, different technologies and things that want to be showcased there from a sales perspective. Just looking at our high performance car segment, which includes not necessarily all the way up to GT and your Ferraris and Lamborghinis, but kind of take it a layer down, your Porsche 911s and Chevrolet Corvettes and similar models. In that segment, we had year-to-date sales decline about 10%, so we have seen a little bit of softening in the high end segment of the marketplace. So heading into next year, it's tough to say. The volume's so low. You're talking about 0.3% in terms of market share. So it wouldn't surprise me if this segment stabilizes to some degree or you see some additional softening. Again, there is an expectation that interest rates will creep up a little bit next year. But again, this is the type of buyer that, a half percentage point or a three-quarter point shift in rate isn't going to make that big a difference. So it's tough to call, but I don't necessarily see a ton of growth in the segment. Likely a similar performance of this year, if not a slight decline.
Okay, terrific. Thanks, guys.
And your next question comes from Nathan Bomey. Your line is open.
Hey, guys. A quick question. Alec, you mentioned the incentive spending per vehicle, and I was wondering if you could just repeat that data because I want to make sure I understand it. You said it was $3,800 per unit heading into December or something, or what was that figure again?
Yeah, so let me get back to that. It was $3,800. It's basically the average we saw in Q4 heading into December is right about where we're at. And comparing that to what we saw last year in 2015, Q4 average spend was just north of $3,000 per unit, so considerable increase over the level we saw last year. And I would suspect, again, we haven't tabulated all of December's numbers yet, but based on what we've seen in the data so far, expectation is that we'll likely end up, for December specifically, likely a little bit above $3,800 per unit. But again, not haven't tabulated the final number there just yet.
Okay. And I mean, like, is there anyone right now who is not resorting to incentives? Are there any companies that are like holding the line?
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, it's certainly a mixed bag in terms of where the incentive spend has been allocated. Certainly, and this is true of this year and most years, but you're always going to see an inordinate amount of incentive spend in full size pickups. Keep in mind there, too, that those are also, from a margin perspective, some of the most profitable vehicles for the manufacturer. So even though there's going to be more incentive there, sometimes, you know, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a unit, there's also a lot more potential profit baked into that. So it's not as though, you know, these trucks are selling at a loss. So if you look at, for instance, Ram and Chrysler, Chevrolet, they're all pushing, you know, Chevrolet is pushing $4,000 per unit, Chrysler, $4,700. Ram, $5,400. That's their year-to-date average. For each of those brands, you have an increase of anywhere from $700 to $1,000 per unit year over year. But if I flip that and look at some of the import manufacturers, Subaru is by far the lowest. They're running about $800 per unit, and there's minimal incentive support there. If anything, it's a little bit of rate support. They'll do, I know on a few models right now, they're running 0% for 48 months, and that's pretty much it, not much in the way of cash rebates or anything else. So Subaru at $800 per unit, which is only up about $100 year over year. Honda actually cut back on incentives to the tune of about $300 per unit. They're at $1,500 per unit spend. Mazda cut back a little bit. Toyota only increased incrementally. But that's what I would look to is a lot of your the Japanese and Korean manufacturers, they've been holding steady and have minimal spend. But again, these are also players that don't have full-size pickups or don't push the same kind of volume in full-size SUVs as some of their domestic counterparts. So it is really segment-dependent in a lot of ways.
Okay, thanks.
And your next question comes from Deanne Durbin from the Associated Press. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. Happy New Year.
Same to you, Deanne.
Did you consider the sales in 2016 high-quality sales, or do you think incentives, especially toward the end of the year, crept up too high? And the other question I had was on the car-truck mix. Do you see anything this coming year kind of halting or slowing the shift over to SUVs, or is this just a permanent fixture from here on out?
I would answer the second question first. We don't see anything that suggests that will change that shift. It's also not just a U.S. trend. It's a global trend, which mm-hmm. you know, makes us think that it's there to stay. Alec, I'll leave the incentive stuff to you.
Thanks, Michelle. And I think on the first question, as far as whether these sales were high quality or not, I think if you look at it, I'll answer it in two ways. From a consumer's perspective, were these high quality sales? I would say absolutely. What I mean by that is that when you look at the credit data and really kind of the makeup of your typical auto buyer. There's been a slight increase in the amount of subprime paper that's being generated, but at the same time, you know, repossession rates are still extraordinarily low. Default rates are still extraordinarily low. So from a credit quality perspective, you know, I think consumers are making good use of the options that are being given to them. From the perspective of the manufacturers, I'd say, again, it's a bit of a mixed bag. I think there's a lot of high-quality sales taking place in high-demand segments. If you're focused on small CUVs, even full-size pickup trucks, there is some cash support on the hood. There is some rate support, but again, given the interest rate environment that we're in, despite the quarter-point increase from the Federal Reserve we saw last month, a lot of those sales have been high quality. But if you look at some of the small sedan segments, mid-size segments, and even some of the poorer-selling CUVs, and especially luxury cars, that's where you see a lot more support on low interest rates for longer terms, right, 66 months, 72 months. That's where you look at leasing at 30-plus percent for the year. So while the sales today were certainly going to be beneficial from a bottom-line perspective, from a profitability perspective for all these manufacturers, as these leases in particular start to come back, a lot of these sales practices could start to hurt in 2 or 3 years' time. So I would say, I would point to the segments where you have extraordinarily high lease activity, extraordinarily high cash support, where the margin perhaps wasn't quite there for the manufacturers, and that's where you have your, I'd say, lower quality sales from the perspective of the manufacturer. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, yeah, definitely. Yeah, thank you. That's great.
And I would go back to something Alex said earlier, too. Average transaction prices are still increasing. Incentives, the percentage of incentives against that is rising, too, but average transactions are, prices still are rising a little bit. The other thing that Alex touched on, we probably should have talked about this when we talked about what 2017 looks like and why we're, you know, hedging our bets here and a range of our forecast in addition to all of the uncertainties. There are going to be a tremendous amount of off-lease vehicles coming back into the market. And the interplay between those, what we call nearly new cars, certified pre-owned cars, against new cars is going to be something to watch. It's a great deal. It's great for consumers, except they'll have to do a little more homework and looking at, do I buy a nearly new or do I buy a new? But how that plays out is something that we're going to pay a lot of attention to this year.
Just one other point I want to throw out there, too, because when you said something, Michelle, made me think of it, but one thing we didn't touch on, we talked about lease, talked about incentive. What we didn't talk about is sales into fleet or into to rental in particular. And one thing I'll say there, and, you know, I can point to GM and to Ford to some extent and some of the others, but I think manufacturers have grown quite a bit smarter with the way they're making use of strategically leveraging sales into fleet, into rental. I think they've cut volume in a number of ways to manage the amount of units that they're going to have coming back to auction in the next 12 to 18 months, similar to the way they're having to employ their lease strategy. And two, they've also been, I think, a lot smarter in terms of making sure that the units sold into rental are more representative of the average car sold to a retail consumer, so that when those come back, you don't have a bunch of cars with crank windows and with no options, right, dragging down your residuals, which are going to make it more costly to lease in the future. So that's another way where I think the manufacturers have been a lot smarter this year in terms of how they make use of that valuable outlet by not overusing it and by making sure the inventory sold into rental is smartly equipped.
Great. Thank you.
And your next question comes from Rye Dresden from the San Antonio Express News. Your line is open.
Yes. Hi, everyone. Thanks for talking to us today.
You
know, one of the things that have been kind of volatile recently have been oil prices, and with that, gas prices have been rising. And y'all talked about the growth in the crossover and pickup truck markets. I'm just wondering, you know, the oil market appears that's going to remain volatile in 2017, and gas prices look like they may continue to rise. But what effect do you, or if any, do you think that will have on the continuing growth in the crossover and pickup truck markets?
Well, I would say two things. First of all, the pickup trucks today and the SUVs today are not what they were 10 years ago. They are much more fuel efficient. You know, the sport utilities are generally built on car architecture, so there's not a huge penalty. The other thing is we typically don't see changes in buying behavior unless there's a spike. I recall the leading up to the summer of 2008, there was a big spike in gas prices. People shifted the way they bought vehicles. They turned away from big sport utilities and they bought small cars. But that was very short-lived. And once gas prices settle in, even if it's at a higher level than they were before, people resort back to their buying habits. The other thing that I would say is a lot of this growth in the sport utility segments of small and mid-size, it's being driven by millennials, the older millennials who are forming households and starting to have children, and they just find them far more practical.
Okay.
Yeah, I think to Michelle's point, it's when you see fuel prices spike aggressively, right? It's like the old boiling frog analogy, right? You can't just throw a boiling frog into boiling water. It's going to react very quickly. But if the rises in gas prices come very, very slowly, that doesn't make that big a difference. And given that we've seen fuel prices fluctuate quite a bit over the last several years, really until you hit, $3.50 plus per gallon nationally, and really $4 plus per gallon nationally, we haven't really seen consumer sentiment really shift all that drastically. So it takes quite a bit at this point. And again, I'd point to improved fuel economy across the board as one of the things that has allowed SUVs and trucks to continue to flourish despite rising gas prices. Because where they're at now, at $2.38 nationally, we're not at a point where there's going to be really much of an impact in consumer preferences, at least for the time being.
Okay. Do y'all have an idea if there's a price point that would shift? I mean, something that you've seen in the past. I know that when gas prices were, in the high $3 and $4 a gallon, a lot of people were switching. But do you think there's a pain point for consumers?
It's really tough to say. Based on what we've seen, I do think that it is at this stage. It likely is at that high $3, low $4 per gallon range where we start to see consumers second guess their decisions. Mm-hmm. But again, that's the last time we saw that happen was, I'm trying to recall, maybe 2012, I think, was the last time we saw gas prices that high. And even then, we didn't see much of a shift, only because, and today I think it's going to take even more because, again, if you look at the fuel economy of, say, a Honda Accord versus a CR-V versus a Civic, you're talking, three to five MPG difference. Between each of those. I mean, fuel economy is really at parity across a number of segments. So, again, that's why I think it's going to take quite a bit to sway where consumers buy, and I would say it's likely north of $4 per gallon at this point.
Okay. And just a final question. Toyota announced near the end of the year that they were going to be changing their mix to 60-40 trucks to cars. And they still say that they're struggling to keep up with demand, especially when it comes to their midsize pickup, the Tacoma. But at the same time, their full-size offering, the Tundra, has struggled in 2016. It's down almost 3% compared to 2015. Where do these non-U.S. pickup truck manufacturers fit into the picture? Because when you just compare overall volume, their numbers are still minuscule compared to your Fords, GMs, et cetera. So where is this? Is this kind of like are they the tortoise? Or are they just slowly growing and growing, and at some point will outpace? Or are they just always going to be in this smaller range?
Well, I would say in the case of Toyota, the Tundra and the Tacoma are two different stories. The Tacoma has been dominant in that category, and in fact was almost alone for a while until GM came in with a couple of products. And the Tundra, the loyalty in the truck segment is the highest in the industry, and so it's very hard to pull people away from those domestic brands. Mm-hmm. The other other thing I think about the midsize, so-called midsize trucks, I think there's a lot of appeal to those because they aren't the tiny trucks that they used to be. And so I think people are looking at those and looking at the price tags and saying, I think that's enough truck for me, and it's at a lesser price. And I think that's really helping fuel the sales of those.
Okay.
Just to add one thing there, I think, you know, Michelle is spot on with the fact that truck buyers are extremely loyal, whether you're talking a domestic buyer or an import buyer, someone that is predisposed to a Tacoma or a Tundra, because on the valuation side, we do see not only Tacoma but even Tundra as having extraordinarily strong residual values, right? So even though they don't sell a ton, and they're definitely a second-tier player at best in terms of volume, from a retail perspective, Tundra and Tacoma are almost untouchable in the truck segment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. Hey, well, thank you all.
And your next question comes from Brent Snavely from the Detroit Free Press. Your line is open.
Hi, Brent.
Hey, guys. So I'll take one more sort of stab and angle at the incentive question here.
Okay.
I guess I'm wondering, just point blank, if you feel where the industry is in a danger zone on incentives. There was some mention of it, how it compared to 2005. And as part of that question, I'm wondering if this increase in incentives, if you foresee it continuing, or if there'll be sort of perhaps a pullback or more discipline when and if automakers get inventories under better control.
I'll take first stab at that, Michelle. I would say, in my perspective, we would only be in a danger zone if we were in a position where the manufacturer said we have to sell 17.5 or 18 million units to remain profitable and to keep our doors open, right? If we're comfortable saying, you know what, we can cut production, we can see incentives pull back a little bit, and we're okay with sales of 16 or 16.5 million units, as that's likely kind of closer to a natural equilibrium point of demand versus, you know, kind of prices out there in the marketplace. Then I'd say we're not necessarily in a danger zone, because there is the opportunity for manufacturers to have a bit more control on the incentive front by cutting production and reducing inventory. So since I think the manufacturers do have an outlet and do have there are strategies in place that I think are being employed to bring that instead of spend down, knowing that volume will take a hit, but it'll take a hit in a way that is still going to be profitable for the manufacturers. And in that sense, I don't necessarily think we're in a danger zone. But that's my perspective. And Michelle, I don't know if you have
I would agree. And I don't think we're in a danger zone. The car companies are in a much better, you know, they've gotten their break-even points down. They're in much better financial health. You know, transaction prices are still going up. And I think the other thing is they have shown that they're willing to be disciplined about shutting down production if inventories get too high. And I think the other thing is they have the ability to be a lot more sophisticated about how they do incentives, much more targeted. I mean, we're seeing them targeted right down to the specific VIN of a vehicle now. So I think that is what those kind of things are preventing this from them getting dangerously high.
Okay, thanks. One thing I sort of foresee is it's going to be a year where we'll have perhaps falling monthly sales, but we'll have to point out and explain that that's largely okay.
Yeah, that may well be, and I do think that we will see more production cuts.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, Brent.
All right. Bye.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one. And your next question comes from Nick Zulovich from Subprime Auto Finance. Your line is open.
Good morning, and thank you again for the time this morning, and Happy New Year to both of you. I just wanted to quickly touch on, in light of the news that came out this morning with Ally Financial enhancing its relationship with Carvana, one of the online retailers. Just wanted to get each of your takes on just how much more comfortable and how much consumers are demanding to a degree to complete or at least begin the financing process online, and subsequently what kind of pressures that puts on the industry to respond to those demands to make the financing process available to someone who's perhaps certainly not at the dealership showroom. They might be on their couch with their iPad. Just if you could just address just how that segment of the transaction has evolved, the financing process online, and how the industry can respond to more consumer demands to complete those processes online. Thank you so much.
Well, I will say that study after study we do with Auto Trader and Kelley Blue Book show that especially younger car shoppers just can't understand why they can't do that part of the transaction online, or at least do the application online and don't have to do it over again once they get to the dealership. So I do think we're going to see more and more activity in that regard. Alec, you may have, and I can't speak to the Carvana Ally. I've been a little focused on sales this morning.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, no, I agree with Michelle. I mean, I think we're very, very close to bringing more and more of the transaction online, especially from the finance perspective, to at least get pre-qualified and understand what sorts of programs are available to you as a buyer before you walk into the dealership. I mean, that is a high friction point in the process that is actively being worked on to be mitigated by a number of players, certainly us as Cox Automotive included. You know, I've seen, as Michelle pointed out, a ton of research around how buyers are more and more willing and express an interest in buying their vehicle online. I think there is a difference when you're talking new car versus used car. I think take finance out of it, right? I think the pre-qualification process, that's going to move online quickly whether you're talking new versus used. But as far as willingness to buy sight unseen, new versus used, new, it's a much easier equation. I can walk into any dealership, have a test drive, know what I want, and then start to work the deal online. Used car, you know, every VIN, every specific unit is a bit of a unicorn in the sense that it has its own story, its own history, and I think consumers benefit a lot more from actually test driving that unit. But with that said, as the inspection process gets to be made more consistent across the industry and consumers can better understand conditions, the condition of vehicles online, and as technology is employed, and even just, you know, high quality photos are used advantageously to make sure that the consumer has a good understanding of what's on that vehicle. Yeah, I think more and more of the transaction and more sales will be conducted online in the years to come. And I think 2017 will be a big year where you see a number of players push into that space aggressively, which has already been happening over the last several years.
Perfect. Excellent. Thank you all so much for your perspectives. And again, Happy New Year.
Thank you. You too.
And your next question comes from Kaylee Hall from The Vindicator. And your line is open.
Hi. Thanks for taking
the time.
Hi, Kaylee. Hi. Hey, Michelle, you mentioned the, I'm sure you know what I'm going to ask next, but you mentioned the cruise.
Chevrolet
incentive.
Cruise.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can you just talk a little bit more about that and heavy they were?
You know, it's the Chevrolet Cruze was redesigned last year.
Yeah.
It got off to a fast start. We saw a lot of interest on our sites, and then it quickly fell off. And it just is simply because it's in a category that's not real strong. And we saw this last month. We saw GM put a heavily incentivize the Cruze. They did a below normal employee pricing. I think I sent you some of the data. The normal cost would be around 24,565,
mm-hmm.
and they made it available for 19,300. And we saw, if you opened your local newspapers, you know, those paper things, you saw lease payments pretty low. Now that was, you know, employees. I believe employees could share that discount, but again, it was one of those strategic, very specific kinds of incentives in a segment that's struggling.
So they're cutting a shift here in a couple weeks. Do you think that will lower incentives then, possibly, or?
It's hard to say. Don't know what Chevrolet's strategy will be on that, if they'll ramp those up or cut. It looks to me like they're willing to cut production to keep inventories down, but they may do a strategy of using both or very targeted. What Chevrolet's been doing of late is very targeted incentives by region, by specific model, that kind of thing.
Right. Okay, and then just overall, are all the numbers in for the sales? Are you guys thinking that this year's going to surpass last year, or still 20,000 below?
Yes, I think not everything is in, but most of the high volume players have reported, and based on what we're seeing, I think we're trending at 20,000 sales above last year's total. So the numbers came in stronger than we had anticipated.
Okay.
So we do expect to close above 16's, above 2015's total, to the tune of about 20,000.
That's for the entire year, just the summer.
It's for the entire 20,000 for the entire year.
Okay, I'm good. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
And there are no further questions at this time. I will turn the call back over to Brenna Buehler.
Thank you, and keep an eye out for next month's call-in details. And if you need anything else today or with CES or the upcoming Detroit Auto Show, please let the public relations team know, and we will be happy to help. Thank you all for joining, and have a great day.
This concludes today's conference call, and you may now disconnect.